With a showman's flair, a comedian's wit, and the capacities of a bona fide mentalist or thought reader, the amazing Kreskin has for 5 decades dramatized the unique facets of the human mind. His very name has become an integral part of pop culture, and he will be in our region Friday night. In 2008, Tom Hanks produced and co-starred with John Malkovich in The Great Buck Howard, which was fashioned after the amazing Kreskin's life. After over 50 years of performing, Kreskin has a new cult following. When he performs Friday at the Wood Theater in Glens Falls, New York, Kreskin will ask to have his check hidden during the show at the Wood, which if he can't find it, he forfeits his fee. Kreskin continues to offer $1 million to anyone that can prove that he employs paid secret assistants or confederates in any phase of his program to help him perform his mentalist effects. He is one of our favorite guests, and it's a pleasure to welcome the amazing Kreskin back to the roundtable. How are you, sir?
Joe, it is good to talk to you. I got to tell you something. God forbid anything happens to me, I'm going to have you do the eulogy. That sounded wonderful.
Well,
it's hard to believe that a couple of years have gone by since we've spoken, and you sound as great as ever. I've got to tell you, the airline, I probably mentioned it to you then, but it is 4 years ago this month that the airline industry announced I've flown a little over 3 million miles. Can you imagine?
No, that's unbelievable.
And last year, New Year's Eve, I think many cities in the United States, I don't know if they have them in the cities around your area, but they have on New Year's Eve what they call first nighters,
Special
event. And I do usually in a different city around the country each New Year's Eve. When I left the stage last December 31st, I had last year done, in 1 year, 261 appearances, if you could imagine. And everybody in the business, I get such a refreshing, I get calls from comedians and a lot of traveling performers say, well, Kreskin, how do you build this kind of record? With the economy as tough as it is, it's hit show business hard as well. But, Joe, I got to tell you, my career is, it's soaring, and it's really an adventure. That's all I can tell. Since the movie Buck Howard came out a year and a half later, I don't care for the title, but it was a darn funny movie. There was a movie called Dinner for Schmucks.
Oh, yeah.
And the character in it, I think it's played by someone named Galifianakis.
Zach Galifianakis.
You pronounced it. When I was with him, I keep saying, Zach, do you mind if I just say Zach? Because what a tongue twister. But in the movie, he plays this, they're whacked up characters. It's a funny movie. He plays this person that claims to read people's minds, but also control their brains. Some of the reviewers commented when you see him at his desk, and he's being people are meeting with him, they always have a wide shot because that large picture next to him is yours truly. I'm the one that's supposed to have trained him. But a number of the movie reviewers said, no, this Kreskin couldn't be like this person. He's not that whacked out.
No, the great thing about you is 261 dates or whatever you did last year. So we can only surmise from that you enjoy what you're doing.
It's really a passion, Joe. I really think of my career as an adventure. Hopefully, in a few couple of months, when my 19th book comes out, you and I'll be able, if you folks are interested, let me know. We'll get a copy to you because
love
at
to.
Some length, I'd love to. I'm like a kid about this book. Even though I've written 18 before, it's not the contents; it's the way it's been formatted. It's like an exciting event for me. But that's the way I felt about my work. Just in the, now I've done over 2,000 university shows, and just a few weeks ago I was at the University of Manitoba in Canada, and of course, as an integral part of my program, is the Czech test, which even in the movie, the last third or last quarter of the movie, pretty much deals with it, because the fellow who wrote The Great Buck Howard, Sean McKinley, was my road manager for a couple of years, and Colin Hanks plays him in the movie. In fact, David Letterman, not long ago, was talking to Colin Hanks and said how much he got such a kick out of the movie. But by the way, interesting enough, isn't it interesting that in the movie, who plays Sean McKinley, who wrote the movie, but Colin Hanks, and who plays Colin Hanks' father, but a gentleman by the name of Tom Hanks, the real father. So it's an interesting interrelationship there. But anyway, I'm at the University of Manitoba, and of course, one of the highlight moments in my program is the Czech test, and I left the large auditorium, and they hid my Czech, and I came back in, and of course, no one speaks to me. There's no questions asked. If I don't find my fee, I don't get paid. And I have failed 9 times, so it's not something I look at with total assurance I'm going to succeed. And I came up to this man and had him empty his right pocket, and all he had in his pocket was a cell phone and some note or what have you, nothing else. And so I guess I'm not doing so well in searching, but I come back to him a second time. And I end up having him empty the same pocket. And so help me God, Joe, I come back to him a third time, and I said, are you sure there's not something else in your pocket? No. All there was this. Well, my road manager, who was in the back of the theater, thought this was going to be the 10th incident, because I came back to him a fourth time, and all I'm holding in my hand is the cell phone and the paper. And the cell phone was in a little case, a little leather case. I took it out of the case. There's no check in there and what have you. And, you know, I got very frustrated. And the audience, you could hear a pin drop, but it just looked like I was about to throw in the towel. And I said, I can't go any further. I can't go any further because everything draws me to this point. And all I got left is this cell phone. And one of the committee members says, congratulations. I said, what do you mean? Can you imagine, Joe? And I didn't think you could do this. They had dismantled, taken apart the cell phone with some tools and put the check in with the batteries and put the cell phone together.
Wow.
That is one of the most diabolically ingenious that I've ever seen in my life. I mean, it really was diabolical. So you know, it as one drama critic in it was in, I believe, either Pittsburgh or Harrisburg. It's a few years ago, but I was at this theater for a couple of weeks, and after opening night, we were disappointed. There was no review or anything the next day, and they said, but he was at the show. Well, the next day, there was a beautiful review, but it turns out he came opening night, he came the next day for the matinee, came that evening again, so he'd seen my show 3 times, but he had a commentary. He says, watching the Czech test as Kreskin proceeds to enact this is like watching a mystery play on the stage, except the solution is different every night. And if you think about it, Joe, really the writers of the script are my audience, not me.
You know,
so it's really, you know, it really is an adventure. I tell you, I've mentioned this occasionally, the first time I appeared at Carnegie Hall, and of course there's 3 or 4 balconies or what have you, before the Czech test, when it was about to begin, in this place that had, you know, had over 3,400, whatever it seats, about 50 people left the theater just before I was beginning the Czech test. They came back after the intermission. It turns out they were people who knew me personally or followed me through the years and knew the tremendous turmoil I sometimes go through. And there are people I know who just could not sit through it because, aside from failing it 9 times, it's the tension. One of the failures took place with the American Medical Association. It was in the College of Surgeons. It was in Atlantic City. And I came back into this banquet hall. And it turns out the audience, they're all doctors. They were not only sitting in regular chairs, but there were folding chairs, a 100 or a couple hundred, because more people were attending the show than they had expected. And I kept going up to this woman, a doctor, and I had her get up. She wasn't sitting under the chair. I turned the chair over. It wasn't under the chair. And I did this 2 or 3 times and finally gave up. And the president of the American Medical Association stood up. He was the dais some distance away. He says, Mr. Kreskin, we're going to pay you anyway. I says, no, I have to keep the integrity of what I do. I cannot accept this fee. As it turns out, they asked me if I wanted it to go to any charity. I tried to turn over to Seton Hall University where I received my degree some years earlier. But that's not the point. The tremendous frustration. Here, I had her stand. I turned over the chair. It was under the chair, what have you. Yes, it was. 1/2 of an inch from the check. It turns out when I left the auditorium, imagine this. They moved tables in 1/4 of the room, rolled the rug up, put the check down, refurnished that part of the room with tables and chairs. The lady was sitting on the chair. It was under her, under the chair, and my right foot was standing on it, right under the rug.
Mm. Now, give me a sense of the process, because how we first met, you and I, was you were at the Egg in Albany, New York, and you were performing, and I was the guy who was responsible for bringing you backstage. So
were you one of the folks that stayed with me?
That stayed with you, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and by the way, of course, that's when I'm at. Is it the Charles Wood Theater,
yes,
show that I'm at?
Yeah.
I understand it's a rather, is it an intimate theater or a large theater?
It's an intimate theater. It used to be an old Woolworth store, and they have...
That's what someone told me.
Yeah.
That is fascinating. Someone told me, because I was looking at some contracts my people called, and they said they convert... Has it only been around for 3 years as a theater?
It's been around... You know, they've used it on and off for different purposes. A local theater company has used it. And then a few years ago, and it seems like longer than three, but I'm not sure, they've had it as the Charles R. Wood Theater. And it's been, you know, just one of the centerpieces of the community. It's a beautiful
I was told glowingly that the community is very proud of the theater. And so I just think... I want to tell you something... because I'm the traveling as much as I do, I'm asked constantly, especially the past 2 years, to comment on the changing scene. Because, as you know, I've made between Christmas and New Year's, I've made predictions each year as how I, not that I'm looking into the future, because I read people's thoughts. I'm not a fortune teller, but I've been able to make some dramatic predictions because, as CNN convinced me many years ago, since I'm dealing with people's thinking, obviously I have something of a sense of what's going on in the direction of things. But I'll tell you, I'm very pleased. I've been at I'm only home 4 days a month. I've been at a few theaters in the past month and a half that not like this, but were old theaters, Joe, going all the way back to the vaudeville era.
Right.
One built in I believe 1903. And in each case, sadly enough, after the movie, the peak of the movie industry passed in the 50s and 60s, these theaters really shut down, and some were really let go by the wayside, except that, thank God, they were not destroyed. And people came investors came in, but also volunteers to refurbish. And it's remarkable, because you know what happens, Joe, if that's not done, then in a town, a building is torn down, a parking lot or a parking building is built there, and suddenly they say, wait a minute, we destroyed a historic site, and you can't rebuild it because you can't afford to anymore. You understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
It's so neat. I'm pleased. I'm pleased that the town has Glen Falls has done that, and I see this in parts of the country because we're losing some of the essence of our heritage. And I don't mean living in the past, because I love to read history, but I don't live in the past. I learn from the past. I think it's extremely significant. The book that Bill O'Reilly wrote on the assassination of Lincoln is one of the biggest sellers in many, many years when people are not reading books. And the problem is, as we've been warned, if we don't study and learn history, and we've been told this many times, we're destined to live it again, and we're going to live. We're going to live part of history, because our political figures are just not aware of it. It's sad, because we can learn, and that's the way we build on. So I'm looking forward to working at this.
It'll be a great.
And by the way, when I walk into the old theaters, of course, the first question that comes up is it haunted? And of course, while I don't necessarily believe in ghosts, I wish my house were haunted. I tell you, Joe, ghosts do a lot less harm than people. Now you got to understand, they do a lot less harm than people. But you know, by the way, listeners might be interested, because a lot of people in show business today who've never studied or talked to anyone that had been in at time close to vaudeville, most of them are gone. But the reason You know, you're not supposed to whistle backstage. A lot of people don't know this today, but you're not supposed to whistle backstage. And you do it in respect, whether you believe in ghosts or what have you, because the feeling has been for a couple of centuries, maybe more than two centuries, that with all the energy of these great thespians and performers and what have you, that maybe something of them lingers in the theater and you don't want to awaken them by whistling. And that's why whistling is not supposed to take place.
So when you go into, and I just want to bring you back, because here we are at the, we're at the Egg. I'm backstage with you. They go in the front of the house. They hide your check. So then they say, okay, we're ready for Kreskin. And out you come. And I've never seen anything like it, because it's like, and I hope you don't take offense to this analogy, but it's like a dog looking for a scent. You know, because you weave to the right, you weave to the left.
Yeah. Joe, I'm going to say, you said something very significant, and that was not disparaging, but it's a very interesting remark, and I'm going to tell you something, because I'm going to quote you. I've been interviewed 1,000 times maybe, but it's a very interesting way you said it, because I never thought of it like this. People ask what goes through my mind when I'm doing something like this, and I'm really in a different world. But it comes back to a couple of moments when I said to you, when I kept coming back to a place that didn't seem right, and it wasn't there,
right.
But somehow the scent brought me there. That's a very, very interesting. But the bottom line is, and I've never talked about this before except this past year. I've never, because I don't want people, listen, people know I'm not mad, or people may say I act mad or close to it around the edge. But no, a book was written a couple years ago called Tasting the Universe. It's by a New York Times correspondent by the name of Seabrook. Very interesting phenomena, and people don't know about much about this because they haven't heard the word. And it's not a good word, because it's not an easy word to play with. The concept is synesthesia. It begins with an S-Y, synesthesia, and it's an accepted phenomena, and it's starting to be studied more now. Synesthesia is a mixing of the senses, whereby, and about, if you're with a group of friends, folks, maybe let's say you have a family, there's a lot of 20 there. Ask who in the family, when they hear a word, maybe see something immediately. Or when they read something, they hear something. In other words, Billy Joel in the book, she has a chapter about Billy Joel. When he hears music, he sees flashes of color. He can't control them. Some mathematicians, when they think of certain numbers, see that digit in color. The reason there's a chapter about me in the book is when she was working on this book, and I did not know what she was working on. She was at a production meeting, a new one of the people there, and she wanted to meet me. And she said, you know, we got to talking, and they said, would you try reading her thoughts? So I asked her to think of some, I don't know if it was an address or what have you, and it may have been, it's like three numbers or what have you. So finally, I didn't tell her. I wrote something down to put in front of her, and I said, Ms. Seabrook, this is the image I got. And when she turned over, she was quite startled. And I said to her, why when I pictured, I don't know the number five, why was it in yellow? And she screamed. I said, my God, is everything okay? She says, Kreskin, I never told you. But when I see certain numbers in my mind, they're in a color, and a five is always in that color. So now, getting back to myself, she interviewed me and so forth. I never said this before, but often when I'm perceiving thoughts, Joe, it's almost as if I'm hearing someone talking to me. No, I'm not hearing voices. I'm not hallucinating. I'm not schizophrenic. But it literally is transformed in that way, which is why, Joe, some years ago, when I found my check, it was at the University of Illinois, and I believe I told you about it before, but I was 8,000 people in the gymnasium because it was a family weekend, so there were parents as well. And I ended up coming up, it was a very crowded gymnasium to walk through. There were bleachers, but I was walking on the main floor. I stopped in front of this gentleman. He's an older man, and I would assume he was not a student, But I had him stand, and I was very stressed about this because I said, "Would you open your mouth?" Well, talk about embarrassment, Joe. Talk about real embarrassment. There was no check, and I felt maybe I'd embarrassed him. I almost humiliated myself. I thought, what a stupid thing that I did. I didn't say that publicly. And I turned from him, and something said to me, "Go back. Go talk to him again." I said, "Jesus, this is weird." And I looked at him. And then that's when I finally said, "Sir, does this have to do with the roof of your mouth?" "Joe, I will never forget this. It's my last day on earth." He reached in his mouth, took out his upper plates, and handed me my check.
Yeah, like you wanted to cash for that.
The only thing, Joe, that I'm a little nervous about is, I'm just thinking, I'm now telling your listeners some ideas. I'm giving out some crazy ideas, Joe. You're going to put me in trouble. Listen, I want to say something, Joe. I hope that when my book does come out, if I can get it to you, we can spend some real time talking about it.
I want to spend some time with you again.
I don't mean to tease in this way, but I have to tell you honestly, I'm so damn excited, and you'll understand why when you get the book. But that listen, folks, don't go out to buy it now. It's not there. It's hidden somewhere on the underground.
Only Kreskin can find it.
Yeah, but listen. I look forward to, and you let us know that if you're going to be let.
Well, I'd love to see you, and it's The Amazing Kreskin at the Wood Theater on Friday night at 7:30 in Glens Falls, and you can go to thewoodtheater.org for more information. Kreskin, you are ever amazing. It's a great thrill to have you on the show, and best of luck in Glens Falls.
And Joe, thank you, and as I've said before, let's borrow in the spirit of broadcasting. I'm not going to say goodbye to you, Joe. Just let's say to be continued, okay?
Indeed. Thank you, Kreskin. Again, The Amazing Kreskin will be at the Wood Theater on Friday night at 7:30 in Glens Falls. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.